From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. As we inch closer to the end of 2020, and the beginning of 2021, we're still sticking with strange news. And what a time to have a segment like this. We've got some green slime in the mix. We've got an actual monolith in the mix. No one knows where that's from. And we have what I would loosely call the future of cannibalism. But it depends. It depends on which expert you want to listen to. So let's see. Where do we start here? I like the mystery of the monolith. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I'm hungry.
Okay.
So, first of all, not to spoiler alert anything, but is this like a beyond human type situation? Because that'd be cool. What if someone manufactured a meat that was cruelty free, not actually human meat, but tasted just like human meat would, so we could all give it a taste without the guilt?
So much happening in that realm right now while we're talking about it.
All right. I can read the room. I can read the Zoom.
Did I nail it? Because I just pulled that out of, I don't know anything about what the story is.
You're about to find out.
Yeah, I don't believe you, Noel, but let's get started. This is great because a long time ago, as a setup for this, in our YouTube days, Matt and I were around for the debut of lab-grown meat, which had a ton of problems because it's still in R&D phase, but did pose a potential alternative to the UN's plan to combat lack of protein in diets. The UN's plan was that everybody should normalize eating insects. And I've eaten some delicious insects. I know that statement might come back to haunt me, but the lab-grown stuff had a problem. We also found what turned out to be a fake website that said it was based in Thailand. It purported that it would allow people to order human meat legally, and you could try it out. Do you remember that one, Matt?
God, it's been a minute. But I don't remember that specific site.
I don't remember the name.
Would that be like if you were maybe an organ donor, you would donate some of your flesh to like a fine culinary pursuit? I feel like there should be a box you could tick that would allow, you know, I would like to be eaten, please.
You know, not too long ago, there was an artist who had some folks together to eat a foot with him. I think it was his foot, too. And that kind of stuff is definitely in a liminal space. It's a legal gray area because the guy consented to share his foot with his very weird friends who consented to eat.
Remember when Michael Scott accidentally grilled his foot on the George Foreman? That was a classic episode of The Office.
I found it. Quick amendment. The thing I was referring to from years back was HooFu. It was marketed as tofu designed to resemble human flesh in taste and texture. But it was kind of a joke, right? That's not the case anymore. We would like to introduce you to our first strange news story today, the Ouroboros steak. That's steak, S-T-A-K, not snake, S-N-A-K-E. Fellow conspiracy realists, you'll of course remember that the Ouroboros snake is that famous iconic snake, which is consuming its tail in a continual pattern of eating and being eaten, kind of like capitalism, I guess you could say, or the nature of reality, you know, circle of life, etc. But the steak, which is named after that ancient Egyptian symbol, is human steak. Caveat, caveat, asterisk, fine print. Here's what happened. So the Ouroboros steak is the brainchild of three people, Andrew Pelling, Grace Knight, and Orkin Telhan. It first appeared at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. It is meat, and it is based on human cells. It's meant to be a critique of the environmental protection arguments of the larger cell-based meat industry. So here's what's going on. The story's years back about lab-grown meat. When you delve into the science of it, essentially the issue is this, that cultured meat still relies on a meat source. It relies on a liquid with the unfortunate name fetal bovine serum, or FBS, so we don't continually gross ourselves out during this episode. FBS is a protein-rich growth liquid that's used for cell cultures. It comes from the blood of calf fetuses. Mm. So it's not all, you know, a shiny utopian future there. So FBS has to be acquired from the fetuses, and that means the pregnant cow mothers are slaughtered for the meat industry, and then this FBS is taken from those unborn calves. And this makes it pretty expensive. We're talking $900 a liter. So if you wanted a 2 liter of this, it'd be $1,800, just so you can picture a Coca-Cola equivalent in your mind.
Does it keep you young forever? Is it sort of like bathing in baby's blood or something like that? Or does it have any efficacious qualities, or is it just delicious?
It's just a potential alternative to the current livestock and slaughter industry, right?
Got it.
And for a long time, this sector, this idea of cultured meat has been in a very tense position. A lot of academics have criticized it because they say, look, you're not really helping. You're encouraging these environmentally destructive industries because the stuff you make depends on this FBS. A couple of studies shot back and said, yeah, well, it could be more climate friendly, but we just need more data before we make any predictions regarding the longer term consequences. So back to the people who created this quote unquote human steak. Andrew Pelling is a scientist. He's one of the primary creators of this. And in an earlier interview, he said, look, this FBS, fetal bovine serum, cost a lot more than you might think. And it also cost these animals lives. And even though some of these alternative lab-grown meat companies have said they've solved the problem, there's no independent, peer-reviewed scientific study giving weight to that claim. So the Ouroboros steak is grown through a similar process. Here's what they can do. You could literally right now take a little scraper or a Q-tip and gather some cells from the inside of your cheek, and then that could be used to grow this kind of steak. But the ones that you will see in the news or in these art exhibits, those are created from tissues purchased from the American tissue culture stock, which is apparently a thing. And they're fed with a serum made from old donated blood, and they grow without this fetal bovine serum. And what's neat is you can find a website for this product. I would love it if you guys pull up and check this out along with me. It's called OuroChef.com, all one word, OuroChef.com. So their argument is that, though they have an Instagram too, delightful. Nothing weird about following that. So their argument is that we can one day supply everything we need to create cultivated food from our own cells. You can imagine one of the first problems with this, just similar to the question you proposed, Noel, is this cannibalism? Is it? We did an episode on cannibalism.
God, I'm just looking at the consumables on their website. Oh, God.
My question is cannibalism inherently wrong or against nature, or is it only because of the murder aspect of it that makes it wrong?
Prions, baby. That's the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to X-Files. I don't know about you guys, but that introduced me to the idea in younger days. Yeah, so cannibalism, we have a whole episode on this for people who are interested. Cannibalism occupies a very weird space in human civilization. In some cultures, consuming the flesh of another is a profound spiritual act, you know, like some... For that X-Files episode or the concerns about prions and so-called mad cow disease, there are cultures where parts of people's bodies, like their brains, would be consumed in funereal rites. But then for anybody who automatically thinks cannibalism is somehow an evil thing, I would point out that there are a couple religions that literally, like, codified cannibalism, communion, right? Especially if you are a member of one of the parts of Christianity that believes in what's called transubstantiation. Communion is literally eating the flesh and drinking the blood of Jesus Christ. And that's not a conspiracy. That's like how it's written. That's what you are supposed to believe.
There's a great bit on Family Guy back when it was funny, where he's like, and then when Jesus rises from the dead to feast on the flesh of the living and we drink his blood. And it's a whole like vampire zombie thing about Jesus. I thought it was funny. It's probably highly offensive to some listeners. Please forgive me. It's the Family Guy. But it's true. You're absolutely right, Ben. So how do you reconcile that with this?
Right. And also, if you're eating, we talked about this too. The technical name would be auto-cannibalism, right? I remember, Matt, I think it was you and I who got into this when I was saying,
yeah, we really got deep into it. We were just like, man, we're really into auto-cannibalism today.
I bet on the show, on the episode, because there are questions like people who, this is a bit gross, and I don't mean to call anybody out who's like absentmindedly doing this while listening to the segment today, but is biting your fingernails, chewing your fingernails, is that auto-cannibalism? For people who pick their nose, and I know you're out there, does that approach auto-cannibalism? I guess it depends what you do with what you find in your nose.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting contemplating the difference in cell types of, you know, what you would be consuming. And that's really what this entire Ouroboros steak concept is about, like the specific cells that are just being nurtured. And it's really interesting, Ben, if you keep going on some of the writing that's been done on this, it's been... it's pointing to a lot of other places and companies that are attempting to make something like this, but with cow meat or chicken cells or other animal cells, not just humans. And I didn't realize there was so much progress being made in this regard. It's pretty creepy and cool at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the idea here is, like, what if you could end suffering, right, for animals that are literally raised to be slaughtered? If you could, and you could do so with little to no inconvenience, then ethically, it's pretty much the right thing to do. Because at that point, if you have an alternative and you cannot distinguish between that and the old-fashioned slaughtered meat, then your only value add is that you like the idea of the animals being killed or tortured. It becomes pretty clear ethically, but we're not there yet because the science is still a few years away. An article in Tech Times brings us to one of those alternatives. In 2018, the first steak grown in a lab was made in Israel, and the people who tried it said, look, we can't legally sell this yet, but I got to tell you, chef's kiss, this is amazing. You get a little... You know what I mean? Get a little butter with this bad boy, some rosemary, you're off to the races.
This is the Aleph Farms people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the thing that kind of grossed me. I was reading this earlier. It kind of grosses me out, but it's cool. Like, they literally take, I think it's four different kinds of cells, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like blood vessels, muscles. I forget what the other two are, but it's four specific types of cells that they just culture and grow into this flat little thing. It looks kind of like a flank steak. And people say it's delicious and it's real beef because it is. It's just cells grown in a lab this time instead of inside the cow.
Have you guys ever seen, I love this when this happens, but have you guys ever seen a business that uses unnecessary quotation marks in their literature or on their signs? It makes it so automatically untrustworthy. You know what I mean? And to me, this feels like one of those cases. Like you'll be walking down the street maybe in a few years in Tel Aviv or something, and then you see a sign that's like, you know, Crazy Ben's real burgers.
Mm-hmm. how do you feel about the self-proclaimed best burger in town or the state or the world or like world's best cup of coffee? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you need to be able to present some credentials or some proof, or people are just throwing this around willy-nilly? Like, what are your thoughts on this?
Got to cite it. Like, how big is the town? Mm-hmm. Did the mayor decide that? Mm-hmm. I think the way a lot of people get around it is just pop in according to, you know what I mean? Like, this is the best homemade bulgogi on earth, double dash, according to Ben's mom. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. You know?
But at the same time, there's no, I mean, I guess it could be considered false advertising, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. But who's going to enforce that? Whose literal job is it to be such a party pooper? You drive through streets and cities across the country.
For grandiose claims about cups of coffee and burgers, you know?
And you just ruin people's days?
Oh, man.
Sorry, Ethel. Your upside down pineapple cake is okay, but it's not the best.
Yeah,
it's true. Take down the sign.
Yeah, Gertrude's is way better. It's better by far.
Or put those, maybe that's it. Maybe somebody is forcing businesses to put those quotation marks on things. Maybe there's some group who comes in, Men in Black style, and they're like, nope, sorry, you're going to have to put quotation marks around best cup of coffee here. Anyway, sorry, I know I'm diverting us, but it's a good thing to think about. Because this is also, like, we can't really describe this as human steak. We would need to put an asterisk or parentheses around it. We know that this is kind of a novelty. Right now, your odds of eating yourself as a steak, which is what they're pitching, those odds are very low. But the odds for lab-grown meat hitting a restaurant or a dinner plate near you are pretty good, actually, much higher than they were. And not just because the technology is evolving, but I would argue because more importantly, the cost is plummeting, right?
Yeah. It is, the cost is plummeting. And people are, if you would have proposed this, what, 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, can you imagine a single person raising their hand and saying, you know what, that sounds ethical and smart. Let's do it. I don't think anybody, especially consumers, would have thought this would be an okay thing. But we're in a place now, not only with, you know, the pandemic and restrictions, and there are a lot of reasons why lab grown meat, whether it is actually built on proteins from animals or whether it's, you know, some kind of meat substitute that truly feels from a texture and taste perspective like meat. You know, I think there's going to be a serious demand for it, especially with the younger generation coming around. Mm-hmm.
For human meat?
No,
just lab-grown meat.
But then, like, take it a couple centuries later, and there is no other animal protein available of any kind, even just cells.
Dark, Matt, dark.
Right. And the Ouroboros, in that case, the Ouroboros of consumption just becomes a shorter snake, does it not? We just have a shorter path here. This is the point I want to leave us with before we move to our next story, and it's simply this. When I'm talking about price, I'm not just shooting the bull with you guys. Aleph Farms, their thinly sliced steak prototype that they made in 2018, it took about 2 to 3 weeks to make, and it cost about $50, right? Compare that, or contrast that rather, to the first lab-grown burger ever, which came out in 2013. That bad boy cost $299,747.25. So the price is plummeting, and it'll probably continue to plummet as we hit economies of scale. We want to hear from you. Where's the beef? What are you going to do? Are you going to eat some lab-grown stuff? Would you like it more if you knew it came directly from you? Would you be weirded out? Or would you prefer, you know, just some kind of lab-grown meat alternative? Do you think the days of fancy steakhouses are over? We'll tell you how to get in touch with us at the end of this, but we would love to hear your thoughts. So we've kicked it off with cannibalism. I think we should go to something different after a word from our sponsors.
And And we're back. Oh my God, Ben, I'm still thinking about that sweet, sweet lab-grown human meat.
Imagine that you're in a spaceship and you're on your way somewhere. It's going to take months and months, maybe a year, Noel, and there's no more protein left because you get delayed or something. But you know that in 3 to 4 weeks, you can grow a steak from your own cheek.
I would do that now.
I didn't even think about that angle. Like, I could literally just scrape off some cells, put it in a dish, set it and forget it, like the Showtime rotisserie, and then come back and I'd have some delicious human meat. But I want to circle back very quickly. I know we're moving on to my story next.
Sure.
But this was sort of initially like almost like a performance art thing, right? Or it was almost like a commentary, like there was some satire going on in the whole thing.
Yeah, very much so. And they're not seriously proposing that we do this, but I'm seriously thinking, I don't know, am I too good to eat myself? I don't know. I didn't think our conversation would get to that point. But shout out also to, I have found this story, and then a fellow conspiracy realist, Ryan J., emailed us with this story as well. So credit where it's due up there in Michigan, man. Stay warm. And luckily, as far as we know, Michigan does not have mutagen oozing out of the streets.
One would hope, or at least not that we know of. Let's start this one off, guys, by let me pass this around the room. How do you guys feel about sinkholes? For them or against them?
Do not support their platform.
Yeah, well, they don't support you either. They literally will swallow you into the earth.
Yeah, I'm against them.
Against them.
When I was in Guatemala, they had a sinkhole problem. And like all jokes aside, it's incredibly dangerous.
How about super producer codename Doc Holliday? Feel like you got some feelings about sinkholes.
I won't call it an intense phobia, but I do have a fear of the ground just like opening up and swallowing my car or my living space. It's definitely something that I've thought of or had nightmares about.
Yeah. For good reason, because I just literally Googled sinkholes explained, and the image that comes right up is like practically half a city block just having caved in completely. You can see like rebar and little surface things that kind of remained, but essentially it's like a sinkhole is where moisture and erosion create a path that allow water to infiltrate the ground and the surface, and then it causes it to kind of erode. And if you're not aware of it, it can be treacherous, incredibly treacherous. They can be like, you know, the size of a single person, but they can also be like the one I'm looking at here, massive. And in bigger cities, they absolutely can be a problem. I've never dealt with one myself, but folks in Toronto, in Canada, were treated to a pretty interesting sinkhole walking around. It's like some blacktop that appears to have cracked and sort of sunken in halfway, but it's filled with a green, gelatinous, glowing ooze, like you said, Ben. It really does look like the ooze, the titular ooze that there was a secret of in the Ninja Turtles sequel, featuring a really important dance scene with Vanilla Ice, the ninja rap. I don't know if anybody remembers that one where he's go ninja, go ninja, go. He made a comeback recently where he did that in a Kraft macaroni and cheese commercial. I had to give him props for that.
Is that a comeback?
It's something.
Yeah, it's important to be creative. You know, I applaud anybody making a career in the arts, honestly.
I completely agree, yeah, especially these days. You got to do what you can. But yeah, so it's true. A gentleman by the name of Richard Southern of 680 News took a bunch of great photos of this stuff. And in this article in the Daily Mail, they compare it to looking. Remember that movie Flubber with Robin Williams with the bouncy goo? Looks like that. Looks like the kind of slime you might make with your kid, but with sort of an iridescent quality. And honestly, that's what makes it a little more spooky. But yeah, it was definitely making some noise, let's say, with the locals. People were talking about it, a lot of Ninja Turtle references, and a lot of kind of hubbub surrounding this kind of potential, like, oh, okay, really? You know, murder hornets, pandemic, you know, hurricane, and now you know,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
Cthulhu-esque mutant slime oozing from the very earth. Mm-hmm. Some good tweets. This made me actually laugh out loud. I now need to have pizza for dinner. I'd probably call Ghostbusters. Somebody call Nickelodeon's legal team. Remember Nickelodeon? It was GAC is what that was called, right?
Yes.
But yeah, it's an interesting thing to behold. And it made the rounds before. It was pretty quickly debunked. And I mean, no one really knew what it was. It was more just kind of a curiosity. But it's really interesting. Even like the actual answer to what this thing was, it's not something I ever really would have thought about. But apparently, one way of checking to see where a sinkhole goes or where it terminates is to pour like water into it and then dye the water a really bright iridescent green, almost like that dye they shoot you up with when you're taking a stress test so they can track it through your body. So that's kind of what it was. Apparently a City of Toronto spokesperson told 680 News, Toronto water staff inspected the sinkhole yesterday evening. Sinkholes can be the result of a damaged or collapsed sewer. In order to determine if the sinkhole is connected to the underlying sewer, a dye test was conducted using a green non-toxic dye, which is added into the sinkholes while monitoring the closest manhole downstream to look for traces of the dye in the sewer. So, alas, nothing supernatural or, you know, nether realmy going on here, which was frankly disappointing. I can use a little bit of a, you know, I would look at that as a silver lining. If it was like, you know, the undying, you know, coming from beyond the veil to wreak havoc on the streets of Toronto, I think that's sort of preferable to what we're seeing in a lot of ways. I'd be down for that.
So viscosity-wise, it is slime-like, though, right? Rather than water. Okay.
I'm not sure. I can't touch it, obviously. But it has the appearance of having sort of like a, what would you call that? Like a surface tension more akin to slime. But it does sound like it is more water, so I don't know. But maybe your brain sees neon green goo, and you immediately assume that it would feel like slime. But it could absolutely just be water.
Well, in that article, they refer to it as slime-like liquid.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and then the original tweet, I think, from that photographer, Richard Southern, who's, you know, he's verified on Twitter. He seemed to have made a pretty good go of this story, is there's a huge sinkhole with a glowing green liquid on Hastings Ave off of Girard. While it would be on brand for 2020 to have the Ninja Turtles appear in Toronto, the city tells me it's a non-toxic dye added to see if the sinkhole is connected to a sewer.
That's the official story. I'm with you here, man. Why take the official, probably true story if we can build an urban legend around it, you know? Also wasn't, for people who did think there was something rotten or weird or Lovecraftian or sci-fi afoot, having a local official say that, don't worry, we do this all the time, isn't going to make people feel better. Right. I'm all about it. I would wonder, though, why they chose green. Is there a calculus there?
No, but it's like I said, I mean, green is the color that they also shoot up into, you know, patients when they do those treadmill tests. Or it's like, but that's actually radioactive, if I'm not mistaken, and they're able to trace its path through the body. Maybe because it does seem to be iridescent enough that it would glow a little bit when hit with light. And it would really separate it from just the other colors that you'd see in a sewer. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just off the top of my head.
It's for the color key. The scientists and a lot of people, they do use Adobe After Effects for a lot of the news.
Green screen it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And meme and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is strange because one thing I really appreciate about this is a lot of these local stories don't get super widely reported. You know, citizens of Toronto are wondering how often this stuff is in there, you know, like running in pipes unknown beneath them. Mm-hmm. Has anybody like turned on the sink and had this mutagen-esque stuff coming out? I would want to hear about that. What would you do? I guess you'd call the water department.
I would probably flip out first, and then I don't know who I'd call. Maybe Ghostbusters? I don't know. Right.
Yeah, but if you call the water department, they're just going to dye more of the water green.
Exactly. to make sure it doesn't get downstream, whatever that means. I always confuse downstream with upstream. That's neither here nor there. Here's a little added story from the Lad Bible website. This is specifically for Alexis, who, trigger warning, you might want to plug your ears, but you also might want to just face your fear. So in New York City, there was a much more serious instance of a sinkhole mishap where a young man by the name, or 33-year-old by the name of Leonard, Leonard Shoulders, which is a great name, by the way, Leonard Shoulders. I love that. From the Bronx, he was waiting for the bus and he fell into a sinkhole that was about 12 feet deep. So, you know, that's a decent little fall. And let's see, I'm looking at the corner where it was. He fell through a sinkhole. And if that weren't bad enough, to add insult to injury, he says it was absolutely swarming with very, very large rats. He even commented that he was afraid to call out for help because there's so many rats that he was afraid they would have climbed into his mouth.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Ew.
Yeah. This is a horrifying tale.
Did this just like open up beneath him while he was standing there waiting for the bus?
Yes.
This is literally one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Your fear is real.
Is traumatized for life. He's talking to his mom and he said, "Ma, the rats down there were ridiculous. They were so big." And she said he was scared to yell out because he thought they were going to go into his mouth.
There's an interview you can watch. Mm-hmm. You can actually see video of him walking along the side street up against the wall there where he fell through. It's horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, can you sue the city over that? I mean, that seems like grounds for a pretty hefty lawsuit right there.
I would believe so. I would believe so. And he's lucky because he survived. Like, sinkholes can be a serious problem, especially as we consider ongoing increase in density of both people and infrastructure. Like the stuff I was alluding to in Guatemala in 2010, a sinkhole that popped out suddenly was like 60 feet wide, 300 feet deep. It swallowed a 3-story factory. I mean, this, Alexis, I know we're giving you nightmare fuel here, but it is not an unfounded fear. This stuff happens. If for anybody who's listening to this and is concerned about the possibility of sinkholes, I would put a little time into researching your local area's water table. That's going to be one of the big indicators.
Water tables, not just for nerds anymore, actually. Could save a life. And the life you save could be your mother effing own. That's a Wu-Tang Clan lyric. So also, I would argue that this phobia, Alexis, is way more self-preserving and well-founded than my phobia of birds. So don't feel bad for a second.
I don't feel bad. And in fact, I'm plotting on what kind of bird story I can send you to pay you back for bringing this to my attention.
Ooh. Let's talk offline, Alex. I got some good ones for you.
I was reading this article a little while back and I can't find, or I was reading about this incident, but I can't find the article I was reading from before. I thought it was the Daily News, the New York Daily News or something, but somebody put in their statistics about the number of incidents that occur in the city of New York where there is some kind of malfunction with either the sidewalk area or, the actual local government would be in charge of, or stuff that a private organization, the owners of a building, would be responsible for, like the grading and stuff to go down into a the basement area of a building. I can't find it. Somebody maybe out there write to us. But the statistics about the number of incidences where people either just have a leg fall through and get injured or injure their ankle or do actually fall into a thing, it was in the dozens per year, which is minuscule compared to the number, you know, if you think about the number of instances where a human being is walking on the sidewalk in New York City, like think about how many billions of instances there are of that. And then to only have a couple dozen actually occur, like fall through or injure themselves.
Yeah.
But still, it's a real nightmare.
Well, and a lot of these are man-made too. We may be the authors of our own atrocity in this situation, which I know is hyperbolic language, but because when we're talking about water tables, like think about places like Mexico City, which is built on an aquifer and takes water from that aquifer. So the groundwater is supporting all the stuff that's not sinking. And we're in a drink your milkshake situation. So like, what if, I'll say it, what if Nestle has come to your town, just like the monorail guy in the Simpsons episode, right? And is drinking the milkshake of a nearby town. And then a sinkhole happens on private property because of that process, you know, like who's to blame? To whom does the buck pass in that situation? This is a very weird conversation, but I'm having a great time with you guys.
I am too. Let's stop while we're ahead and do a quick ad break, and then we'll be back with another strange news story.
And we are back. For this story, we are traveling way out west towards Utah. Actually, in Utah. Mm. We're just going to Utah, everyone.
Great salt flats. Are there salt flats involved?
Mm-hmm. There are some, yes. And we are specifically going to be dealing with a crew, a very professional crew of people who, while they were supposed to be working, instead were counting sheep.
You mean taking a nap, is what you're saying.
No. They were literally counting bighorn sheep.
Oh.
This is a crew from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, I guess. And they were in a helicopter from the Utah Department of Public Safety. They were flying over these, relatively uninhabited by humans areas, and they were looking at bighorn sheep populations, mm-hmm. or the population of bighorn sheep. And, you know, everything was just happening pretty normally until one of the biologists who was there on board spotted something shiny out of the helicopter that was down on the ground in kind of a valley area down there. And it's crazy. This is a quote. He was like, whoa, 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 turn around. And I was like, what? And he's like, there's this thing back there. We got to go look at it. Okay. Intriguing, right? Mm-hmm. that was the quote. okay. So they saw something shiny on the ground. They're in this helicopter. They circle back. They land. They all get out, all excited. Like, what was that thing down there? Maybe it was just a piece of metal sitting down there, you know, middle of nowhere. Well, as they go checking it out, they found wedged into all of this red rock, like the surrounding sparse area, there was, I'm not kidding you guys, a monolith. Like, think straight out of 2001 Space Odyssey, the metal, whatever substance it was, black monolith that is just
obsidian,
protruding.
Perhaps.
Yeah. It's protruding out from the sand, from the desert sand, and it's just there, and it's just existing. And and it represents some kind of creation because it's got the perfect cuts on it. It's obviously created with some intelligence. Who knows from whence it came or from when or where it originated? This thing looks pretty similar. Not quite as intriguing as the one from 2001 A Space Odyssey, but it is a big metallic 10-foot, 12-foot perhaps piece of metal that is certainly created by some intelligent being. Just going to leave it there for now. Mm. And it's just sitting there, and you just come upon it and you just behold. And then everyone is left wondering what the heck it is and why it is there.
What are some theories, Matt? This is fascinating. I mean, it looks to me like some piece of industrial architecture or something, right? Like something you might see in a train station, like a pillar or something.
Have you guys gotten to take a look at it yet?
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not in person.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a ton of very strange art in Utah, in this area. Like, mm-hmm. check out the Tree of Life when you have a chance, which mm-hmm. is not as much of a mystery, but just as weird looking.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is, well, yeah, I don't want to completely poo-poo the mystery here because I don't have official, you know, recognition from some artist that this is a piece of art or from, you know, some crew that lost something in a flight above the area where a large hunk of metal just like shot into the ground and just stayed there and has been there for years and years and years. We have no official explanation for what this is yet, but an art piece of some kind is the, I would say, the most likely scenario. But I don't know. Something about this, about seeing it in the same way that it affected these biologists and, you know, helicopter pilot, it's affecting me and just making me think about intelligence and how it would show itself to an alien species, to another species. Like, how would we display our intelligence to an extraterrestrial species? Like it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Or how would we even convey something to generations beyond ours of humans? You know what I mean? There's been some fantastic research, very thorough research, by the way, into how we would best warn future generations about a nuclear waste site. You know, do we make something out of stone? Because that's, as far as we could tell, that's like the main kind of structure that lasts. I mean, we've also, to your point, Matt, spent a great deal of time figuring out what to include on space satellites, right? Simple visual representations of mathematical concepts are super popular because math, as far as we know, seems to apply kind of, sort of, the same way wherever you go until you get to the quantum level.
Let's not forget the Georgia Guidestones. I mean, that was a stone monoliths inscribed with instructions for rebuilding civilization, you know, supposedly, or that's one interpretation of it. It's interesting, in this Guardian article at the bottom, it mentions that this monolith was very similar in appearance to the work of this particular sculptor named John McCracken. And then it gives, he's passed away. In fact, he passed away in, I believe, 2016. But it gives a link to a gallery that his work is on display in, called the David Zwirner Gallery. And it has some images of his stuff, and it's eerily that thing. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I haven't actually seen that, but yeah, that sounds like the absolute most plausible thing. I don't want anybody to get their hopes up. This thing is not, it looks as though there are places where bolts have gone in on one of the sides where it's actually been enclosed and connected. So, you know, it doesn't look like it's even that high tech. It looks like a piece of art. But when just imagining it in this world, in this, the environment in which it's in, where it's found, it feels like it could be another planet almost, if you were seeing it out of context with the red stone and where it is, just in this very stark area. And it made me, again, and I know I do this all the time, Ben and Noel, and I'm sorry, it made me think of Buzz Aldrin's C-SPAN comments from, I believe it was 2009. Yeah, on July 19th, 2009, when Buzz Aldrin went on C-SPAN and he was talking about the Apollo 11, I think it was 40th anniversary. And he made the comment, you'll know this, and you can find a clip of it online, when he talks about the monolith on Phobos, one of Mars's moons. And it's literally Buzz Aldrin saying, people are going to wonder, where did that monolith on Mars's moon come from? And, you know, we talked about it before on this show, and we've looked at it before, and there really is a huge monolith on Phobos, this weirdly shaped, almost potato-like moon that goes around, I think it goes around Mars every 7 hours or so. It's basically a really fast, small object that goes around Mars. And again, to me, it doesn't even matter that the best science says the reason why that monolith is there is because it's some kind of ejecta from when what are now two moons, you know, collided at one point and created two moons. And this thing is just left behind from there. But that just, That to me is selling short the mystery and the excitement that you could get from thinking about what this could be.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, here's the thing that always mystifies me about this kind of stuff. Our impetus as a species is to finally find something. It's odd that on a microcosmic level, so many people say they hate spoilers. On a macro level, our species loves spoilers. We want more. We want the curtain pulled back. We want to see the machinery of the cosmos. And we're getting better and better at it, considering we started from the bottom. Now we're here. Oh, my God, Drake. Anyway, wow. But what I like about your point with the mystery here, Matt, is that it is inherently erroneous, and I would say dangerously presumptuous, for us to assume that we know everything already. I know it feels maybe self-satisfactory to be able to poo-poo things and say, no, that's all mundane stuff. We understand it. But my friends, the universe is a very, 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 very big, very dark room. And our knowledge is just like a sputtering candle on a birthday cake. You know what I mean? And it flickers, right?
Yeah, but it's one of those annoying ones that you blow out and then it lights back up again. And then you blow it out and it lights back up again. I hate those.
I think that's inspiring.
It's way better than being completely in the dark, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Just remember that's
true. Yeah, because we still don't know what swims out there in the ink. You know what I mean? I know I'm talking like I'm writing a sci-fi story now, but it's true. And my question with this would be, first off, the boring questions, but important. If we cannot identify the creator of this, human or otherwise, we can certainly run some tests to see how old it is. We could do some research to see who was in the area during that time. I'm 99%. Sure that someone will come forward. It'll be some outsider art. It'll be a discovery that was made by a human intended for the enjoyment and the fascination of other human beings. But there's that 1%. There's a 1% that's always like, oh, hold on, maybe. So we should keep our eyes on this. We should ask people who live in Utah and listen to this show, have you seen this? Are you going to go see it? Will you tell us about it?
I was just texting our compatriot, Alex Williams, who just spent a good little bit of time out there, asked him if he'd seen this or heard anything about it. His response was very quintessentially Alex. He said, nope, looks like a lot of places I went in Utah, but you know, there's a lot of it out there. It being wilderness, probably all kinds of weird shit hiding out in those rocks.
More monoliths everywhere.
More monoliths, please.
Wow. Yeah, well, if you're if you've also been out there like our friend Alex, or you know, maybe your name is Brett Hutchings and you experienced this and you want to write to us and tell us about what you experienced, please do. We're very, very much interested in your thoughts and your experiences. If you've, you know, dealt with some green slime like substance protruding from your city streets, we'd also like to hear from you, especially if you're in Toronto and you saw it.
Did you ever go to Nickelodeon Studios and get hit by the Gak geyser? Tell us about that. What was that like?
And would you eat lab-grown human meat? Would it matter to you if it came from you or someone else? Like the old gross question in grade school, if you had to eat poop, would you be more comfortable if it was yours? Weird question. I went to a weird school. But but the other question here, honestly, is would you eat human flesh if you had to survive? It should disappoint and distress and maybe not surprise most of us that statistically speaking, the answer is yes. Check out our cannibalism episode. Check out all the other strange things we have mentioned. Stay tuned for our classic episode coming out tomorrow. And also, no spoilers, but we have some crazy stuff lined up for you this week. While you're waiting for it to come out, reach out to us, write to us. Mysterious monuments, green slime in Toronto, the question of what is cannibalism. We're open to all that and more. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. We love to recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy, which is our Facebook page full of the best part of this show, your favorite listeners.
If you don't want to do that, you can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave us a message. Tell us if we can use your voice on air in one of our listener mail episodes. And tell us anything and everything. All this stuff Ben already mentioned. We accept it. We'd be excited to hear from you. Any other ideas you've got for an episode or just something you want to ask us, please give us a call. If you don't want to do that, you can always reach us via, what is that old thing that people used to use it back in the day? What was it? Email.
PDA. PDA is what you're talking about.
Oh, PDA. Okay. You can email our PDAs at
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.